Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning. And we head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our friend Corey Curtis to the program from News 2. Corey, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Robert. I am a delight. Thank you.
Well, we appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. Corey, your reaction to both the New York Knicks and the Carolina Hurricanes wrapping up their respective championships over the weekend. Knicks doing something they have not done for a long time. Carolina finally breaking the door down under Rod Brindamore's head coach.
Well, you know, probably good for the NBA, for the Knicks to win a title. I mean, I know it was good for our ratings. The ratings were way up. Interest in the series was way up. And also just goes to show you, you know, that in any of these playoffs, it can really be about, number one, getting hot at the right time in matchups. And, you know, they got hot at the right time. They matched up, you know, well with the teams they played. I think also, you know, their ability to finish, you know, where other teams couldn't finish was just really impressive. And you have to look at guys like Jalen Brunson, you know, who – you know, really help cement their place in history with you know, not just the championship, but the way they was able to finish games and finish things off. And, you know, Carolina, you know, we thought Carolina and Colorado were the best two teams all year. The record said so. Obviously, Vegas got hot at the right time, but the talent won out. And a very worthy Stanley Cup champion for sure.
Can the Preds take anything from that team, the way it's built, the way they went about their business, Corey?
Well, I mean, yeah, you can take something. They just won the Stanley Cup, you know, obviously.
But, be like them.
You know, but a big, strong, physical team. And by the way, wasn't afraid to go to their backup goaltender in a crucial situation. You know, because he was playing better. I thought it was interesting that the starting goalie, the Anderson, got the cup second, even though he didn't play the last couple of games.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting. But, like, I mean, you know, you got to be gritty. You've got to be physical when it comes to this time of the year. And I think that's what Barry was pointing to, bringing in a guy like Brady Martin last year with the fifth pick of the draft. Is he viewed him as a playoff type of player. I mean, Jordan Staal didn't have 20 goals this year, but I think he scored in 7 games in a row in the postseason. And, you know, there are certain guys who this time of the year step up. You know, the Tkachuks are like that. And I think, you know, that's what he was looking for in a Brady Martin type. And you know, that's the type of players you need to succeed this time of the year.
So, Corey, a lot of conversation last week on the Cam Ward front as it relates to accuracy in OTAs. We had, you know, back and forth discussions about all that here on the program as well. I mean, accuracy has been a concern with him, you know, before the OTAs here. So I guess my question to you is, as mandatory minicamp is around the corner for this week, do you have any concern with Cam Ward and what you've seen or maybe not seen from him at OTAs? Where do you come down on the Cam Ward conversation?
I mean, look, do you want him to be more accurate? Of course you do. Am I going to freak out about it right now? No, I'm not, because we saw the same articles about Caleb Williams and Drake May last year, especially Caleb Williams. I mean, I heard one radio host, national guy, talking about the Bears preparing to start Tyson Bagent. You know, I think, you know, people want to cause drama. People want to cause controversy. You know, yes, Cam needs to be better, but I think the thing we don't always know is the why. You know, is he trying different things right now? Is he working on footwork? Is he working on arm slotting? Is he working on grip? I mean, I don't know. Or is he just inaccurate? Is he just missing? I mean, or guys in the wrong spot? You know, that's, you know, sometimes that happens too. We don't know all the reasons why. And I know some people sit here and say, I'm making excuses. I'm not making excuses. I don't know the why all the time. And, you know, does his accuracy generally need to be better? Yeah. Yeah. But am I going to freak out about it right now? No, I'm not. I want to see what it is in July and August. You know, I'll be more concerned if it rolls into that. And I think some guys are also just not pinpoint. I mean, not everybody's Tom Brady. Not everybody's Tom Brady. And you can still be successful not being Tom Brady.
Okay, you got to name a name on Tyson Bagent. You got to give me a name on this.
It was Jason Smith.
Jason Smith.
He got a contract extension last year. He said the Bears are preparing to bench Caleb Williams and make Tyson Bagent their quarterback.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I love at how about a Fresca, but my God.
Yeah. No. It was. But again, you know, we get overload on certain guys, you know, certain players, and I think people feel like they have to push against the curve, you know, on them because they're so tired of hearing about them and their talent level, and you know, they want to create controversy where it isn't.
I'm talking about the general NFL fan media conglomerate, too willing to get all excited about like someone like Carnell Tate showing positive signs this time of year, while then trying to poo-poo negatives when key players don't play well?
I mean, you could argue that, but I mean, the fact is that we're having these conversations, you know, says that we're not completely poo-pooing it. And I think everybody's excited to see Carnell Tate play well, but at the same time, understanding that he hasn't done anything with the pads on yet. This is just a positive for him. You know, we've seen Cam play some, you know, in the National Football League. We saw the last 8 games of last year where we did see improvement over the first 9 weeks of the season. You know, and whenever you get rookies, you know, this is your first impression. And we generally want to think the best of rookies because we always, you know, all they are is ceiling. You know, all they are is potential. And so when you see some of that potential flash, that's when you're like, okay, well, maybe they've got somebody here. Because, I mean, good Lord, this team needs dudes. And, you know, if he is one. So, you know, you're going to have that. I mean, this is what the NFL wants. Right, they want us talking about their sport 12 months a year, and they've achieved it, and it causes us to speculate both ways on people.
Corey, without having watched them play a game together yet, how do we feel about the Alante Taylor Cordell Flott combo on paper? And adding to that, okay, if one of those guys goes down for like any length of time, like 2 games, 3 games. How up a creek is this Titan secondary?
Well, I haven't watched Cordell Flott practice yet. So, I mean, I don't know. Look, we've seen the Titans invest at corner before, all right, and thought they were going to be okay. So, look, the reasoning is sound with both guys, whether you think they overpaid or underpaid or whatever paid. The reasoning is sound with both guys. Now they've both got to come in and produce. Now, they didn't draft any corners. Yeah, they brought in Josh Williams from Kansas City as well, so he's depth. But you know, they let Daryl Baker go, and all I know is that guy always ended up starting.
That's true.
So, you know, I think you know, do I feel good if one of those guys gets hurt? No, I don't. I mean, you know, because I mean, they have so few corners that I mean, Cam Harris has basically been handed a starting role at nickel. And I like Cam Harris, but he's a second-year player and a late-end draft pick. I'd like to see a little bit more competition there. So I don't think that the depth at cornerback is something that anyone should be excited about right now.
All right, speaking of excitement, what's your excitement level right now for U.S. men's soccer?
You know, pretty impressive, you know, when you see what is probably their best performance ever in a World Cup game. It's interesting because we were having a discussion in the office Thursday before the game started, and I put everybody's name on the board, including some people in the newsroom, and I asked how many wins for the U.S. at the World Cup. And I got a lot of 3s, 4s, and 5s. And Joe, you and I are of similar age. I am, of course, older. We all know that.
Yes, thank you.
So we have seen the disappointment that is U.S. men's soccer on a national scale. And I also watched them the last 2 years leading up to this World Cup, where I did not think they were particularly impressive most of the time. So I said one, where everyone else said three, four, and five. I thought they would beat Paraguay, tie Australia, and lose to Turkey, and then lose in the knockout round.
Oh, boy.
But you know, obviously, after that win, you have to reevaluate. And you know, what I reevaluate is, you know, what I did not see in the last 2 years leading up to this World Cup was a lot of Chris Richards and Christian Pulisic on the field for the United States. And those are two superior, talented players. And, you know, when you go 83 for 83 passing in a game, that makes a difference. And when you see Pulisic drive through the defense, one and two guys, and then create mismatches, and you see him meg back-to-back guys leading to goals, you know, that's stuff we don't have. And also now, you know, and you've also got, you know, Flaren up there. You didn't always see him in those matches as well. You've got the ability to finish, where the guys they were replacing these guys with didn't have the talent level and didn't have the finishing ability that they had. And, you know, so if these guys can play up to their potential, you know, we could play well. I mean, and obviously you saw it. We scored four goals against a team that doesn't give up many. So, I mean, it's real exciting. It's real exciting, but you got to do it again.
I mean, The Athletic has ranked the U.S. 4-1 win against Paraguay the fourth best World Cup win in men's U.S. soccer history. Fourth best. So the more you know.
But like I mean, Corey says, like, you could argue this is the best performance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the best we've ever played. I mean, we dominated.
Unless you want to go back to 1930, the first one, you know.
Yeah, I wasn't at that one. I was close, but I wasn't at that one. I think my grandfather
had to listen on radio.
Yeah.
Rex Road was still in the crib then, so he couldn't quite figure it out. Corey, great stuff as always, sir. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and we will talk to you next week.
All right, fellas, you guys have a great day. It has been a pleasure.
You as well. The same as
thanks,
always.
Corey.
Corey Curtis, our guest here on the program. We will react to what Corey had to say, get back into the Cup Final, the World Cup, anywhere you want to take it, NBA Finals, all that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game, presented by Green Ventures Landscaping for homes and businesses that want to stand out, not blend in. Visit greenventureslandscaping.com. Live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Appreciate Corey Curtis for being with us in the last segment. Ian Safar is riding high today as the New York Knicks wrap up the NBA championship.
Go New York, go New York, go.
What a performance
by
Jalen Brunson. Joe won't say it, because he's a hater of the Knicks here on the program, and specifically of Kuharski. But, Ian, congratulations to you.
Thank you.
On the championship this weekend. Well done. How are we feeling this morning?
Feeling pretty good. Pretty good. I mean, as we talked about at the start of the show, the Knicks were, you know, almost a team of destiny, you could call it, so to speak. I know Joe was not on the Knicks bandwagon because of the regular season. And maybe there's some type of conversation we could have, deep dive, about how much the regular season matters and some of these long 82-game seasons. You know, it kind of carried over for the Carolina Hurricanes in the Cup playoffs,
yep,
and the Cup final and all that stuff. Regular season didn't really carry over for the Knicks into the postseason. Once they kind of got rolling, you could almost like forget about the regular season. They were already, this was kind of just like the team they were. Maybe, I don't exactly know what it took to get that way. Like what during the regular season didn't click, if they were waiting for the postseason, how much it was coaching, Brunson, matchups. There's probably some in-depth stuff we could get into at some point maybe. But yeah, the Spurs youth, I think, showed a little bit there. I think their fatigue showed up a little bit there. And it, for whatever reason, with the Knicks, it didn't matter what the score got to. You knew in the fourth quarter it was going to be a one-possession game towards the end. And it was a combination of Brunson, and both teams, I thought, played really good defense. And the Spurs youth kind of took over, and turnovers kind of showed up. But it was fun to watch, texting with my dad and, you know, throwbacks to all the Allen Houston and Patrick Ewing and John Starks and all those 90s moments there and seeing everybody. It was fun to go back for sure. It was a fun watch.
It's an amazing story. Congrats to you. Congrats to Gentry Estes and all the real Knicks fans out there who are different from the fake Knicks fans like Paul Kaharsky. I will say that I don't think I was the only one on this program who said at different points, like, whoever comes out of the East can get smashed by whoever comes out of the West, right? I mean, that's
– what does the tape say? Like, did we check the tape on
the
bald cap?
Yeah, we're working on that
All right, we're checking on that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Oh, the bald cap bet?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was confined to the – Thunder, right?
We'll find out.
We'll have to do some clarification. Maybe perhaps this week.
That's fine. That's fair. The last few years, the Knicks have been like a 50-win team, you know? Like 47-35, 15-32, 51-30, 53-29. Like, they're a good team. And they get through the East. I think this story over time is going to be even more incredible because, and again, I'm not trying to be a hater here. I don't look at them and say, oh, that's an NBA champion, you know? But they have guys who, and certainly you start with Brunson, but like Ed pointed out earlier, I mean, you got to give OG Anunoby his flowers too. Like, just an incredible, these are not like supremely, overwhelmingly talented players, or nor is the roster that, but the guts they showed. You can't measure the intangibles they have. It's an incredible story and team. And it's awesome for Mike Brown, too. I mean, the guy's been, I think, fired three times previous to this. And he definitely outcoached Mitch Johnson, definitely out-adjusted him in this series without question. I think the Alvarado move in game four being one of the key ones there. But it's incredible. It's so awesome to see. You're talking 1973 here. I still contend like this is a team that punched above its weight to do what it did. But again, that's okay. Like that's a great story, you know?
Yeah, their chemistry showed up for sure.
Yeah, chemistry and intangibles. Like, how many champions of the NBA, because teams can make runs, but to actually seal the deal and win it, when, you know, again, on paper, they're not, I mean, I don't think too many people talked about them as a contender this year. How many teams have actually done that and won the whole thing, you know?
2011 Dallas Mavs, 2019 Toronto Raptors are two I think of immediately.
Those are both good. But even the, you know, like the Mavs, I mean, you still had
Dirk.
And they were pretty – you still had Dirk. He's older, but still pretty freaking good. Yeah, the Raptors, that's a good call. Now, granted, listen, not to be a hater on them, but if the Warriors weren't completely destroyed by injuries, they would not have that title. Klay blows his knee, you know. But whatever. I mean, they won it. So, sometimes, and that's part of any championship, there's luck along the way too.
Sure.
Right? I mean, even you know, like you said, I mean, you know, the Knights had a key injury. I mean, like these things happen, and you have to be good and lucky. But it's awesome, and I love, especially I know people get sick of the celebrities and all that stuff, but like people like Spike Lee, you know, who have been there forever, and it's pretty cool to see the whole thing and some of the celebrations in New York.
You want to see what artificial intelligence says? I just typed into Google, "Who is the greatest New York Knick of all time?" This is what artificial intelligence says. Jalen Brunson is widely regarded as the greatest New York Knick of all time. After leading the franchise to their first championship in over 50 years and securing finals MVP, he cemented his legacy in New York basketball history. Widely regarded, Joe, your thoughts?
So AI is also prone to being a prisoner of the moment. Good to know. We keep learning more about AI.
I'm telling you, I heard a lot of people saying that this weekend. He's the greatest Knick ever. Like, really? Already? Okay. He did win the championship.
I mean, right now, I get it. I get people saying that. You back away a little bit. I think he probably has to put in a little bit more time compared to, like, a Ewing, who was there for so long. And it was a great player for a long time. And
Willis Reed.
You know, they couldn't quite get it done. Yeah, Willis Reed. I mean, Walt Clyde Frazier, of course. I mean, those guys are the previous champs.
He definitely is unseated Melo. There's no doubt about that.
What's that?
He's unseated Melo. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Was Melo on the All-Knicks team before this?
According to AI, he's the fourth greatest Knick of all time.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. Like, how do people, you know, how do you compare like a Dave DeBuscher. How about how about Bernard King? For anybody who doesn't remember how great Bernard King was, VFL Bernard King. And speaking of which, by the way, you know, the Kaharski, the one productive thing he's done in this entire conversation is sent that the little Instagram thing about the guy who wrote the Go Knicks, Go New York, Go New York, Go song. And apparently that was Ernie Grunfeld who
his wife
heard the song, also VFL, Bernard King's, you know, Ernie and Bernie partner in Knoxville, who like made it happen. So there is a Vol connection to this championship.
There always is. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the NBA Finals, the Stanley Cup Final, the World Cup, any way you want to take it on our phone and text lines. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. No, Ian is feeling it this morning. Taking your thoughts on the NBA Finals, the World Cup, the Stanley Cup Finals. Carolina gets it done last night, Joe. They win the Stanley Cup in Vegas, 3-0 the final. The fewest amount of games to win the Stanley Cup for a team since the 1988 Edmonton Oilers. Carolina's 16-3 in the playoffs, so 19 games total. Edmonton in 1988 had 18 games. There have been a lot of teams since then that have been right at the 20-game mark, but Carolina, the fewest amount of games to win a cup since the 1988 Edmonton Oilers. And, Joe, I mean, Game 5, they totally took control. Last night, I mean, really, for the majority of it, it was never in doubt. They were just suffocating, and a worthy champion last night for the Carolina Hurricanes. They get it done. They finally break down the door. Rod Brind'Amour wins it now as a captain of the Hurricanes and a head coach of the Hurricanes. And a heck of a performance last night by Carolina in the shutout win in Game 6.
Yeah, 16 wins and 3 losses in the playoffs. Pretty amazing. I mean, you go that 88 Oilers team, you know, Gretzky, Messier, Curry, you know, guys like that.
Pretty good.
Kind of a ridiculous team. Yeah, Grant Fuhr in goal. Sure, sure. And we're comparing them to this, and Rod Brind'Amour, first captain of a champion and coach of the same franchise since Toe Blake and people like that in like the 30s. So the fourth guy to do it, and the only one anywhere close to modern times to do it. Yep. So I mean, he's great. I mean, Brind'Amour, it was pretty cool seeing him. Because, you know, obviously he's Mr. like, if we don't win it all, we suck, you know. So, cool to see him be able to celebrate.
Shirt and, came off in the locker room with the cup. He's still absolutely jacked.
Yep. Rod the bod, man. Yep. That's the goal, man. That's the goal, is you get in the gym, you know.
When he took his shirt off, I immediately was like, wow. I mean, Rex wrote him pretty similar. That's what I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, technically, both dad bods, you know, by age. So, although actually, he's a lot older than me. See, there you go. Someone that much older than you can be in that much better shape. So, just imagine what you can do if you have any work ethic.
There's hope for us still. Huh?
That's right. That's right. Still time. Still time to put it all together. But not a great champion, and I think it's cool that a team built with a lot of, I mean, maybe I'm disrespected, a lot of really good players, but they don't have the superstar element on this team. They just have a lot. They have depth, and their style of play, as you talked about earlier in the show, is a huge part of this. Their cycles in the NHL. It's interesting to think about, you know, anytime a team wins it all, there's the, you know, how do they do it, and how can we be more like them? What can we do to be more like them? I mean, it is cool to see a team like that win it all after they've kind of built this core and they've been really good for a long time. But a lot of people are like, are they ever really going to get over the hump? Like, do they have enough if you don't add some supreme talent somewhere to get over the top and actually get it done? And well, yeah, they do it emphatically here.
Oh, and by the way, people had those same questions leading into this year's playoff. It was like, all right, Carolina is once again really good hitting the regular season. So does it matter? I mean, I say this year's playoff, they motored through the first two rounds and were 8-0, and then they got to the conference final. And I remember people talking about it, saying, all right, well, they're playing Montreal now. Are they going to win a game? Like, because they've gotten to the conference final before, and they just, a lot of times it hasn't gone very well. So, like, they're going to win two games? Like, what's it going to look like? And then this is the year where they break it down. I mean, I said it earlier. If you watched them play last night, there was a lot that went into it. There's a lot that has to happen when you win a Stanley Cup. It's hard to play much better defensively than Jacob Slavin did last night. And it's never going to get all the accolades. And, you know, Slavin, when you look at him, he's not some offensive juggernaut out there. Like, he's probably never going to win a Norris Trophy. He's 32 years old. He's been around for a long time at this point. And he put up, you know, he played 39 games in the regular season this year. He put up 8 points. Like, I think his career high for points in a season is 42. So, it's, I mean, you're talking about a guy that's not known for his offense. He is the best defensive defenseman in the league, bar none. The best. And you saw last night, like, how important that would be. And pretty good year for him. USA Olympic gold medal. Wins the Stanley Cup. I think he's the first American hockey player since Ken Morrow in 1980 to do that with Miracle on Ice, and obviously the first of four for the New York Islanders at that point, too.
Wow. That's amazing. The history they've made here is phenomenal. So how can the Preds be the Carolina Hurricanes?
Carolina didn't really even tweak their roster that much.
Not much.
I mean, Ehlers was a big move that really helped them in the postseason.
Yeah.
But everybody else has been on the team. Slavin, Stahl, we mentioned, Svechnikov, Aho, all those guys have been there. And for whatever reason, I guess they made the trade for Keandre Miller, kind of helped out the back end there. But everybody in general, it felt like it was just the same team, and they, for whatever reason, were just all on the same page this time around.
They had a lot of ingredients that were already there that were successful. And, like, if you're the Predators, you're looking at, you know, I think what it shows you, Joe, is there's more than one way to skin the cat, right? Like, there's more than one way to win. Yes, I would still argue over time that if you're going to get there and have a chance to win consistently enough, I mean, having the superstar players certainly helps, right? And we've seen that play out that way in the NHL over the last couple of decades. But, I mean, Carolina has a ton of very, very good players. And by the way, I mean, don't overlook this. We talked about it earlier. They've got a ton of established guys. They've also had some younger players step forward over the last few years that have made a huge difference. Like Jackson Blake, I think, ended up leading them in points. He's 22 years old. You know, the Stankoven trade, you know, you take a situation where you tried to nail down Mikko Rantanen and get him under contract long term. He told you he wasn't going to sign, so you flipped him. And you end up with, at the time, a 22-year-old, now a 23-year-old, heading back the other way. So you're talking about two guys right there, Stankoven and Blake, that are young players that were huge parts of your playoff run. So not only did you have the guys that you drafted that have been a part of your veteran core for a while, you have some guys you brought in via trade, like Stankoven. You've had a free agent signing last year that was huge for you in Ehlers. And it's kind of everything coming together at the same time for Carolina. And that's a really hard thing to replicate if you're the Nashville Predators. But I think what it shows you is, like, everybody, we keep talking so much about the importance of finding the generational player, and I'd love to find it if you're the Nashville Predators. But it does show
it's better to do that than not.
Right. But it does show you that you can win in other ways.
And then throw whoever in goal and go in a title.
That too.
Got a goalie? If you got a goalie. Do you have a goalie? You got a couple goalies. Great. That'll do.
Well, and
I mean, that seems to be the trend, man.
Well, in all seriousness, like, I think there's a, in today's NHL, there's a willingness, maybe quicker than ever, to go with a different goalie in the middle of something, right? Like Anderson, and Brendan Moore did say last night that Anderson was nicked up a little bit, so it wasn't like he was completely healthy. But, like, Bussy comes in, and he just shuts the door, and he plays great. And, you know, people will look at it in retrospect. I don't know how much of a difference it would have made, but, like, Tortorella is more of an old-school guy and, you know, probably could have gone away from Carter Hart at some point in the Cup Final, chose not to do it, and Hart just didn't play very well in the Cup Final. He was okay last night, but on the whole, did not play very well in the Cup Final. So, like, if you're Chris McFarland looking at the list, because it's an interesting thing, you've got McFarland who's looking at Carolina and they just win the Cup. He's also coming from a team, Joe, that is, I mean, it is built with two absolute peak of their game superstars at the core of it, right? When it comes to Cale Makar and Nathan MacKinnon. So he's seen a team constructed that way, and he's seen a team win a championship. And yes, they were deeper than that. Like they had, if you're going to win a championship, sure, you have to have more depth than just your superstar players. But everybody would agree, if you go back and you watch why Colorado won in 2022, why they were the best team in the NHL in the regular season this year, it's because of Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar and the pieces that fit in naturally around that.
Yeah, so his experience is more, we got to get guys that, and of course, like again, you, everybody wants guys like that, but in the meantime, you keep adding, and you need more and more of your high picks to turn into, you know, top good, really good NHL players. The Preds haven't had enough of that. The one parallel he would have with his past experience in like this championship is, who's in goal tonight? Okay, yeah, get out there. Go ahead. You got it. Yeah, we're good. We got enough elsewhere. Just, you know, don't be a sieve.
They did win a Stanley Cup with Darcy Kemper in goal. So there is that.
That says it all.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Final segment of the show coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Final segment of the day, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Joe, going back to the conversation on the Rob rant about objectivity with people covering your sports and my assertion that most people don't care. I stand by that assertion. Mm-hmm. We have heard from some people on the text line, though, where that are seemingly bothered by the lack of objectivity in their sports consuming habits that they have. A lot of the examples pointed out are like teams broadcasting teams, which, again, we talked about a little bit earlier. And I just, you know, it bothers me too, but that's not going anywhere. Like, that's always going to be a thing. I just like the shift that I've seen in, like, the sports media landscape in general over the last, I would say, 15-ish years. Pretty dramatic how different it is now, and, like, people just don't care. That it's like, oh, yeah, I mean, Stephen A. Smith covers the NBA, and that's how he came up and made his living. But it's like he's a gigantic Knicks fan and doesn't care. Or like Mike Greenberg talks about the NFL every day on his show, and he's a giant Jets fan. Nobody cares. Like all that stuff.
Yeah, I like that someone pointed out, like Greg Wyshynski. I mean, he has mentioned before that he like grew up a Devils fan, but he doesn't. That doesn't, you know, that doesn't enter his work at all. And again, he's more of a writer, so I do think that the Homer stuff is more on the broadcast side than the writing side. Also, people talking about, like, I think Willie and Seamus, I like the bounce. I don't think those guys come off like screaming about every call against the Preds or, you know, being like, oh, you know, over the top homers. I think they keep it down the middle. Well, you know, you look, your announcing teams for teams are paid by the teams. That's different than like media that covers the team independently, right? So you have to expect a level of homerism, but I think those guys strike the right balance. And a lot of people do, and some don't, and some have never. And if anybody knows who Ken the Hawk Harrelson is from the White Sox days, going way back, I mean, just an absolute, just insufferable homer. You know, going way back. So some of this isn't new. What's new is, like you said in the rant, is sort of like, you know, just like, yeah, like national media who are like, here, let me tell you who my favorite teams are. Whereas in the past, no one ever knew or ever really cared, you know?
Yeah.
Now it's become a thing where I think ESPN, for sure, like you said, Barstool is an example of a...
There's money.
Whatever you want to call them, I guess a media company. But yeah, like they're very much built on, like, this is loudmouth fans yelling at each other. But even ESPN has leaned into, hey, tell us who your teams are, and you guys can, and some of it's just like someone will just mention, oh, my Georgia Bulldogs or something like that. But like with Stephen A, it's like he's like crying or something. And it's like, dude, I don't know. This might be a little bit much.
It might be a little bit much. But again, like, I said at the beginning of the rant, like, how many people actually care? That's the genesis of all this. Like, does it bother you when you're like reading people who are supposed to be objective and clearly are not? Like, is that a problem at this point? And it goes back to your rant. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, look, if I ever, whenever for The Athletic, I write anything about Michigan and it's not complete, like, worshiping at the altar of Michigan, the comments and the story, Michigan State, yeah, Smarty. Here, you know, I mean, people, you know, what Vandy and Tennessee fans are always trying to find, you know, you're a Vandy guy. Oh, you're a Tennessee homer, you know. So there's like some of that built into rivalries, especially like looking for any sort of bias. I mean, in Michigan, it's very bad with Michigan and Michigan State. It's whoever went to whatever school, they must be total agents for that school, even if it's not true.
Well, but like
they do it.
As somebody, like take the Packers, for example. Like I'm a Packers fan. I don't want like Matt Schneibin, who works for The Athletic, or Rob Domofsky, who works for ESPN, that covers the Packers. I don't want them like writing good things about the Packers all the time. Like I want legitimate questions being asked. Yes. Same thing with the Titans, right? Like, you know, people get on PK sometimes for like not being a Titans fan. I'm like, well, do you guys really want him to be a Titans fan? Like, you know, especially with how bad they've been lately. Like, I want somebody in there asking difficult questions or being able to criticize people. Like, as a fan, I find value in that stuff. Like, some objective, no nonsense. Like, you know what you're reading. Maybe you don't agree with all of it, but at least you know what you're reading is not coming from a place of somebody just being like so dishonest and saying rah rah yay team all the time that you actually get what's actually happening in there instead of some watered down version of whatever it is.
Right. So, and also, yeah, when there's something positive to be like, okay, let's keep it in perspective, not run wild with it. Now, and that's a good, that's another part of like a non-fan coverage is like, I'm not going to go crazy with, oh my God, Carnell Tate had a good practice. He's amazing. But there is the fan side of covering a team where you are so emotionally tied to it, you almost go too negative, right? There's that
there
too.
Is.
There's like the fan that's so, like you're angry, and so you exaggerate like the, I mean, I know that as a fan of my team, sometimes I'm like, nah, I'm done. I hate this team. I'm done watching them, you know? So like from a media perspective, you don't want someone who's like, oh, this team sucks. They just suck. See ya.
No, I agree.
Wrap up the season.
Well, but I also think that when you're like Kuharsky, for example, and it doesn't have to necessarily be him, but like think of somebody who's objective that covers the team that you think. Like to me, it's one thing if you've got people covering your team that are just blatant homers all the time, even when things are going well. Like to me, when they talk about it, it just doesn't mean anything because everything's always good all the time with you guys.
Right?
Yeah, like if
it's like the boy who cried wolf.
Right. So it's like, how much value does that really have if you just think things are either making excuses all the time or things are going well all the time? Like to me, if Kuharsky says something's going well for the Titans or has something good to say about the Titans, I pay attention to it because I know he's not some homer in there just being like, oh, yeah, whatever the Titans want to do or whatever the message they want to control is, well, that's what we'll go with.
Yes, everything is a positive spin. Look, if you follow a college football team, you know, the SEC, but Big Ten or whatever, and you follow like a recruiting site, you'll find that like the coach at the time is doing no wrong. There's a positive reason for everything.
Oh, yeah.
And then as soon as that coach is fired, yeah, that guy kind of sucked. We knew it all along, you know. And it's like, well,
really?
Okay, I don't like that. I don't respect that coverage if you're not going to tell any truth because they're giving you recruiting information and whatever or whatever the reason is. And then you trash that coach when they're gone. It's like, well, why weren't you telling us this when you knew about it before?
It's rampant in today's landscape. I'm interested to see, like, 15 years from now, what does the media landscape look like on that front?
We'll all have to dress up like Matt Jones. We'll all have to wear whatever team we're covering and just wear, you know, that team's colors.
Pom-poms.
And a big puffy hat, pom-poms, foam finger. And just, you know, we'll just have them just scream. We can do chanting on press row like those kids that I saw in Oklahoma City. Just everybody, defense, all together, you know, make it even louder. It'd be really great.
As we close out today, I'd like to congratulate again two members of our show that are just feeling good today. Ian Safar, Paul Kuharsky, New York Knicks fans. Legitimate New York Knicks fans.
I really wish I would have asked PK to name someone other than Jalen Brunson like 2 months ago. He would not have been able to do it.
2 months ago? Try about 6 weeks ago. 4 weeks ago. We can keep going. That does it for us today here on the program. Hope everybody has a wonderful rest of their day. Next Man Up with Jake Lyman coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.